Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, campfire crew. Let's get it on. Thanksgiving with Unwanted Guest, submitted by Haroon5. First off, let me say I was a foster kid. I've never met my birth father and my piece-of-shit mother, who's tried to meet me more than a dozen times, but I remained steadfast in telling her to fuck off. She left me when I was just a baby. I'm not going to get into all that, but if she hears this, you can eat a bag of shit, lady. Not that this makes a difference in my story, but it does explain why I was by myself, and trusted to be so, and how driven I was. You'll get it. Anyway, sorry, I hate them both. But my foster parents were amazing, and I consider them my real parents, well, because they adopted me as their own after caring for me for 5 years until I was 7. They're both gone now, and I miss them. They were the only family I had. But I digress. When I was 18, I had earned enough credits to graduate high school early. My mom was an engineer and my dad was an electrician, and they promoted both trade education as well as intellectual studies. I grew up with books, music, hands-on learning experiences, and a healthy dose of reality. I mean, they were amazing. My senior year, I was working a capstone internship in CAD, so I only went to school half the day, and then I went and got paid to work at a really great place. For such a shitty start to life, I was killing it at this point. That Thanksgiving, my parents decided they wanted to take a trip down south to the Florida Keys to see some friends. They wanted me to go, but I knew that if I worked the day after Turkey Day, I would not only earn some extra ass-kissing points at my job, but I would also make time and a half with a comp vacation day that most interns didn't even get. We had a huge talk about me being home by myself, the rules of the house, and all that shit. Finally, it was decided they were going to go, and they trusted me to take care of myself. Cue my best friend Frank. Frank was also in my circle of CAD and such. He came from a very wealthy family, and he and I knew each other since I got into my foster family. He was one of the only people who knew my parents weren't my real parents, and he is still my best friend to this day. His parents were also going out of town for Thanksgiving, and therein lie the plot for us to have a little fun of our own at his house. It was going to be simple. A little smoky-smoky, some wobbly pops, a few close friends, and, well, you get the idea. We assembled our crew of Devin, Mike, and Angelo. I mean, total sausage fest, but so what? We were going to hang out, smoke a turkey, shoot some pool, etc. Devin got his brother to get us a couple cases of some local craft beers, Frank got the turkey going early that morning, and Ange brought the green. Frank's basement was really rad. It was finished with a full bar, a dartboard, pool table, a huge media center with one massive TV hooked up with an Xbox, and three TVs on the side that had sports games running. I was there at 11 in the morning, and I got a text from my mentor saying, "Hey, skip Friday. You'll still get paid, and you'll still get your comp day." Yes, things were looking great. The basement had windows and French doors to the outside where there was a patio and the grill and the smoker was. I mean, this was a righteous setup, no doubt. And by noon, all the guys were there, and we set in on the beverages. Ange had also brought an old Nintendo. We set up a Tecmo Bowl tournament for some fun. The turkey was turkeying, we were laughing and chilling, and all was well. Frank's backyard dropped off down to a lake, and all around it was a walking path in and out of the trees. When I went outside for a smoke, I looked down the hill and saw a guy dressed in all black walking on the path. I didn't think twice about it. I mean, who would? It was just some dude out for a walk. He went by and kind of looked up at me and then disappeared into the trees. A few minutes later, he came back, looked up, and then disappeared in the other direction. I went back inside. I was next up for the Tecmo Bowl. I was using Green Bay because I knew the trick of the nose tackle who could always sack on a run. Yeah, I'm a cheater. Anyway, a couple of more beers in, guys shooting pool, food was almost ready. Frank went to the door, opened it, and yelled out, "Hey, can I help you?" The rest of us looked over and he yelled again, "Hey, what are you doing?" We all got up and went over to the patio to see this guy that I had seen earlier trying to climb a tree at the edge of the yard. He jumped down and ran to the footpath and was gone. And I told the guys about what I had seen earlier, and we figured he was just some kook and went back inside. Frank and Ange had by now hit the bong a few times while they made stuffing and mashed potatoes upstairs and were laughing like all hell at some inside joke. We were laughing downstairs, laughing at them, and then we began to eat and were talking about how great this day was. We were all crashing there, and we were talking about extending the party into the next day and also inviting some more guys to party that night. We all got on the phone, called about four more friends, and cleaned up the food. When the first guy, Paul, came over, he came in through the front door and immediately said, "Who's that weirdo out front?" He described the same kook we had seen, and all of us ran upstairs, but there was no one on the front lawn anymore. By now, we were thinking something was more than up. We went back downstairs talking about it, and then the other guys showed up, and we just kept partying. More beer, more food, and the weed was starting to take its toll, as the four of us started to get sleepy while the other guys who would come later had just kept having fun. Maybe 45 minutes later, I awoke from dozing on the couch as another friend, Scott, said, "Guys, there's some dude at the door." Everyone looked over, and there, at the French doors onto the patio, with his hand on the doorknob, was that guy. But now he was wearing one of those rapist-style ski masks, you know, the ones with the holes for the eyes and mouth. The door was locked, thank God, and when we noticed him, he took off. Frank said he was going after, but Ange told him not to. I mean, he could be trouble. We all relaxed and got back into the party, screwing around and watching football. It was now about 8 o'clock at night, and everyone was either pretty buzzed or high, and things were just toasty. Me and Paul went upstairs to get stuff for some sandwiches and some snacks. And that's when I noticed the front door was open. Not the outside glass door, but the heavy main door. Scott was the last guy to come over, so I yelled downstairs and said, "Hey, Scott, did you forget to shut the door?" He yelled back, "No." I took my shoes off and closed the door. Weird, but I just shut the door and we went to the kitchen. Paul took a pit stop in the bathroom, and when he came out, we both heard a thump coming from upstairs. "Probably Frank," I said, and we just took the food downstairs. But when we got there, we noticed that all the guys were there. I looked at Paul and then said aloud, "Guys, I know I'm a little bit high, and I'm not being paranoid, but something's wrong here." I told them about the door and that we had heard something upstairs. Everything was quiet except for the TV, which Devin finally turned off. Frank finally said, "Okay, fuck this. Let's not get crazy. Let's just check this shit out." One by one, we went upstairs, and when we walked through the kitchen and the dining room, we all met up again in the living room. And that's when we heard another thump from upstairs. Frank motioned to all of us with putting a finger to his lips. We followed him to the back hallway, and he went into his garage. We went out with him, and he pointed at his family's set of golf clubs. Everyone grabbed one, and for some reason, he had a cricket bat. I mean, I didn't even know what it was at the time, but I picked it up. Maybe half the guys stayed downstairs in the living room, while Frank, Ange, Mike, and me went upstairs as quietly as we could. There were four bedrooms, a study, and two bathrooms up there, so walking softly on the carpet, we split up in two directions to check things out. Frank and I went into his bedroom, and then his sister's. No one was there. Ange and Mike checked out the other rooms, and again, nothing. Then we heard another bump coming from his parents' room. We all looked at each other and went in. There was an ensuite bathroom and a walk-in closet, so we also went in pairs to check both. Ange and Mike went to the closet, and I can't tell you how tense we all were. The smoke and wobbly pops had worn off, let me tell you. There was another soft bump coming from the closet. Frank went past the guys and opened the door and flicked on the light. And at first we didn't notice anything. But then Frank slashed out with the golf club that he was holding and cracked someone's legs that was behind his dad's suits. The guy who was standing there let out a yell and burst through the clothes. We got the shock of our lives. It was the guy from outside. He still had his ski mask on, and in his hand was a turkey wing he'd been eating. But what was crazy was the look in his eyes and the fact that he was not wearing his dark clothes anymore, but Frank's mother's clothes. No shit. Pantyhose, a bra, and a blouse. He screamed like a woman and lunged at Frank when I jabbed the bat right into his sternum as hard as I could and he fell back. Frank slammed the door shut, and Mike, me, and Frank put our bodies up against it while yelling for one of the guys to call the cops. The guy was now yelling in a language I didn't recognize and was pounding on the door. Every once in a while, I could make out a battered, "kill you fucker" in broken English. I thought maybe it was Polish or something, but we were getting too busy yelling on our own to think about it. This nut just kept trying to get out. The house was in an uproar, and it was about 15 minutes later when a car pulled up and two cops came to the door. The guys downstairs said there was someone upstairs that we had trapped, and they ran up and told us to stand back. I almost shit myself when they pulled out their guns and opened the closet door. The guy almost fell out onto them, and they immediately got him handcuffed. We all had a lot of explaining to do, and despite our pleas to not tell Frank's parents about what had happened there, as there was nothing stolen or broken, the lieutenant or whatever, their boss, showed up, and he realized right away that we'd been drinking and smoking, and of course, there were no parents around. After the story was told and we gave him all the details, he went back to his car and came back a while later. He wasn't super nice, but he was being pretty cool when he said he had to contact Frank's parents, but was going to give us a break. I told him I was really the only one supposed to be there, and he said, "Okay, that's your story. Just you two. The rest of you are not to leave this house tonight. Sober up, get your shit together, and clear out in the morning." He motioned his hand as if to say, "Give me the weed," and Ange handed over his satchel. The cop shook his head and said there would be a follow-up. We kept it low-key for the rest of the night. You better believe that. We finished off the beers, cleaned everything up, and then just watched TV for the rest of the night. Frank's parents, of course, got the call to get the full story, and they were really cool about it, too. Frank did get lectured about locking the front door, but that was about it. We learned that the guy was a homeless person from the next town over and had some pretty serious mental issues going on. I guess it's more sad than scary at this point. So, that's my story. A crazy homeless guy snuck into my friend's house, ate some food, dressed up in women's clothing, and was hauled away. Happy that no one got hurt, because he did have a pocket knife in his coat that he had left on the floor when he put Frank's mom's stuff on. I haven't had a Thanksgiving like that since, and I don't want to either. Noise on the Bottom Bunk by DJ. This encounter happened when I was 12. It was a week before Thanksgiving 1997, and I had gotten suspended from school for about 3 to 4 days for something petty. On the first day of my suspension, I was awakened by the sound of the plastic cover moving on the bottom bunk. The plastic protective covering was never taken off at the time. I looked at the clock on the dresser and was thinking that my little sister, who slept on the bottom bunk at the time, was going to be late for school. I dozed back off for a few minutes until the sound woke me up again. I told my sister she'd better get up or she's going to be late, but she didn't answer. The noise continued on in intervals. It was exactly as if someone were taking their hands and rubbing it across the plastic, but the noise was only coming from the part towards the foot of the bed and nowhere else. What was also strange was that there was absolutely no body movement behind it, just noise. Directly across from the bunk, about 5 feet away, was a large dresser with a large mirror built into it. I looked at the clock, then sat up in bed and moved over to look into the mirror down under the bottom bunk to tell my sister to wake up. I was confused briefly when I looked down and noticed that no one was there. At that very moment, the plastic made the noise again from the same spot I was looking at. I got so scared that I literally leapt off the top bunk and ran out of the room, leaving the door open, and I ran into my parents' room, where my dad was still asleep. My mom had already gone to work. I was so scared that I got into bed with my dad and woke him up, telling him what happened. But he just kind of shook it off and went back to sleep. After some time, I could still hear the noise carrying on in my bedroom at different intervals, but eventually it stopped completely. I was still scared, but I felt comfortable being around my dad, so I was finally able to get some more sleep. Around 11 a.m., he woke up and woke me up as well, telling me to get ready as we were going uptown for a while before he had to leave for work. That took my mind off things, and eventually I had forgotten about what had happened earlier. Around 1 p.m. or so, we came back home, and he had to leave for work, so I was left home alone until my mom and little sister came back around 4. I was having fun playing with one of my handheld games in the den. I mean, if anyone remembers those R-Zone things from back in the mid to late 90s, and I was just hanging out watching TV on the couch. Time went on, and I was just chilling. Then out of nowhere, the exact same noise from down in my bedroom started up again. I turned the TV down and just froze. And this time around, the noise was more loud, intense, and continuous. I mean, it was as if someone was deliberately trying to scare me or get my attention. It was only the plastic covering on the bed making the noise. Nothing else. I was scared stiff, but I tried to lean back slowly on the couch to look down the hallway towards the bedroom to see if I could see anyone moving in the room. But I didn't see anything, and the bedroom was well lit from the sunlight shining through one of the windows. It took every bit of courage for me to slowly get off the couch and hide behind it so that who or whatever was down in the room wouldn't eventually come out and see me. At this point, I was almost crying, and I had to use the bathroom badly, but all I could do was hold it and stay frozen behind the couch in that one position. The noise continued on for hours, up until about 30 minutes or so before my mom and little sister came home, which was around 4:30 or so. I'd never been so glad in my life to see someone else. I don't think I told my mom what happened, but later on that night I told her that I wanted to take the plastic cover off the bottom bunk. So we did. I checked the plastic carefully for holes, just in case maybe an animal or something may have gotten into it and it was moving around. But there were no holes to be found. I checked under the bed and found nothing. The ceiling fan and air vent wasn't on and had no way of blowing on the bottom bunk anyway, so that was out of the question altogether. The rest of my days home from suspension went on without an event. Though I was still wary, I wasn't scared anymore. At the time, during the encounter, I wasn't even thinking about a ghost, but it dawned on me later that it might have been one. The question that plagued me was, why was it trying to scare me, and why was it focusing only on the plastic covering on the bed? Whatever it was or its reason, it was the scariest thing I've ever went through to date. Nowadays, as I reflect back on it, I definitely believe it was possible poltergeist activity, and not just an average spirit passing through. Thanksgiving Creep in China, submitted by Anna. This is a long one, but I'm trying to keep as many details as possible because this happens in China, and I'm not sure how many listeners you have from China who have ever been there. About 5 years ago, I had to be in China for a trade show on Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving in the States, that is. The Chinese do celebrate their Thanksgiving.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But it's earlier in the year and not really like what we do back home. First off, let me say it was odd being away from my family and friends for the first time. But work was work, and I do love to travel. I was there with a coworker I'll call Susan. We were both in our late 20s and there to do some marketing and publicity with trade papers and magazines for a client. It doesn't matter who, and most of you would find what I do pretty boring. Outside of the client people, Susan and I were the only agency people at the show. What was cool was the client reps were super awesome to us and took us to all the cool spots on downtime. And one good friend, Zhang Min, invited us to her villa to celebrate Thanksgiving U.S. style, but with Chinese cuisine. We were excited to say the least. An afternoon of drinks and fun, and it was our last day of the show. Susan and I were staying for 3 more days to sightsee. The show wrapped up at noon, and the last days of any shows are total snoozers. Most everyone we needed to meet with had already left, and the organizers always seemed to put the most boring presenters on the last day. We were anxious to get out, get changed, and meet Zhang and head to her place. I cannot stress enough how rare this is, as most homes are not that large. Her father was the CEO of the company that we were working for, and people like to have larger gatherings at restaurants, so again, like I said, this was rare. Her family welcomed us in, and introductions were made all around. Our Shanghainese was good, hence why we worked for who we worked for, but Zhang's family, parents and 2 brothers, insisted on speaking English for good practice, as her father said. One of her brothers had invited a friend. I'll call him Lee. Right away, I got a weird vibe from him. He didn't say much, although his English was very good, but he did stare at me a lot over the course of the afternoon and evening. At one point, the beer I had been drinking and the stuffiness of the house was getting to me, so Zhang and I went outside for some air. They lived in a very nice neighborhood, so we sat on the steps of her villa and talked. At one point, I looked over at a window, and there was Lee, staring at me still. I asked her about him, and she shrugged and said she didn't really know him, only that he hung out with her brother. We went back inside to eat, and her mother had made all kinds of great things. They really made us feel at home. Following the rules of etiquette, we were all seated around a big round table. Across from Susan and I were her brothers and Lee, so I tried to not look too freaked out when Lee kept staring. At one point, I began to wonder if he had a handicap or something. That's when I felt a foot touch my foot. At first, I thought it was Susan trying to give me some kind of signal, but it became apparent it was not her. It was Lee. Creepy factor now in full effect. We continued to enjoy the meal with her father, talking about how he came to where he was, and stories about growing up poor, moving to the States, and then coming back. It was fascinating, but the foot thing kept going on, and I tried to keep my feet as far away from him as possible. After we ate, Zhang had another surprise. She had gotten us a table at a high-end nightclub with bottle service. She invited some of her other friends and was excited for us to see another side of Shanghai. She got ready, and then we went back to our rented apartment to get spruced up. People not familiar with clubs like this should know that anyone going out then looks like they're fresh from the salon with their best clothes on. It's not like a college town bar. We were all gussied up and ready for a fun night out. But when we got to the club, I found out that Lee had been invited too. And it became pretty clear, pretty quickly, that once outside of a household setting, he was not as quiet. In fact, he was a totally different person. He was loud and boisterous and kept referring to me with a word I was unfamiliar with. There's lots of words in China that some areas say differently, by the way. But he would say it to the other guys and point at me. And I asked one of Zhang's friends what it meant, and she rolled her eyes and said it meant hottie in English. I also rolled my eyes. I mean, I'm not a dog, but I'm no come-hither beauty either. But then I overheard him say something that was totally uncool. This I understood, and it was basically, you fill in the blank here, I'll have her sucking my blank. I began to get really uncomfortable, and what was once a fun night of drinking and playing dice didn't matter. I didn't want to be there anymore. Susan kept telling me to laugh it off, but the last comment was too much. I got up to go to the restroom when Zhang came with me. On our way back to the table, I stopped to adjust my shoe, and when I stood up, Lee was right in my face with a scary-looking grin on his face. It wasn't pleasant at all. I said something like, excuse me, and tried to get around him, but he just shifted in front of me again. Now I was a little pissed, and I said, "I'm not interested, and I'm not kidding." He said, "Oh, you're interested, I can tell." I tried to move around him again, and this time shot past him and got back to the table. I told Susan what had happened, and that I really wanted to go back to our place. She was more than drunk at this point, was just laughing. I told Jung what was going on, and she said something to her brother, and he just sort of shrugged. Now I was not only pissed at this guy, but also at Susan. I made my mind up to leave without her and just go back to our rented apartment. Probably a dumb idea, but I was irritated and mad. I told Jung I was going, and said something to Susan, who just kind of laughed again. Jung said she understood and called a taxi for me. I stalked outside of there, hurt and pissed. When I got into the taxi, I turned around to see Lee staring at me. He had followed me out and watched me get in the cab. I didn't care. I was just thankful to be getting away from that scene. I calmed down a bit and was feeling better when I got to the place I was staying at. There was a gate around the building, and I felt even better when I got through there, went up the 5 flights and into our tiny room. I collapsed in a floor chair and just sat there for a few minutes. For some reason, I knew I wanted another drink and remembered we had some things we got as part of our trade show goodies. I opened a small bottle of Baijiu and poured some in a cup, sat in the dark, sipping it. After about a half an hour, I thought I heard a noise outside my door. The doors at this place were not the strongest things in the world, and there was a tiny gap at the bottom. I bent down a little bit, and I could see 2 black shadows, obviously feet, right outside the door. There was no peephole on the door, and I heard a soft scratching noise, too. Then a soft whisper. "I know you're in there, hottie. Come let me in." I sat back down quietly and didn't say anything. The tapping and scratching continued. The shadows on the floor did not move. I was thinking if I should call the police, but I'd never had to do that, and I really don't even know how they operated. But the tapping got louder, and he said, "Jinu, open up. Let me in, Jinu," which is basically calling me a slut or a whore. Now I was really getting nervous. I tried calling Zhang and Susan, but neither of them answered, and they were probably even more drunk at this point. But now, he was practically punching the door, and I called out, "Go away, Lee. I'm calling the police." He just laughed, and I wondered why no one else on the floor was coming up to see what was going on. Then something came through the little crack under the door. I didn't want to turn the light on, but did, and saw that it was a condom. "I promise I won't be too rough, you know." His pounding became harder, and finally he said, "Let's F, you know. No more playtime." I was sweating and really scared. I kept trying to call Susan and Jung to no avail. And by now he was fooling with the swipe card lock and punching the door. Then, thank God, I heard peals of laughter from down the hallway. The pounding stopped, and the shadows disappeared. Jung and Susan were there, coming down the hall, completely smashed, and as mad as I was with them, I was so happy that they chased this creep away from my door. I still don't even know how he got in. They both came in, and I burst into tears, and they sobered up a bit and asked what was wrong. I told them the whole thing, and Zhang got on her phone after plugging it in. It would have been dead. She called her brother and yelled at him about Lee and said what he had been up to. She hung up and we all sat on the floor. Susan said she was so sorry she wasn't paying attention and poured me some more Baijiu to calm down. Eventually I did calm down and fell asleep on the floor. We all did. It was over, and I didn't see Lee for the remainder of the time we were there, thank God. Zhang told me her brother confronted Lee, and he told them that I basically had led him on, had been touching his feet at the dinner, and then invited him back to the apartment only to get there and then not let him in. So, yeah. Nothing physical happened to me, but after a long week of work and not knowing what to do in an emergency in a foreign country, psychologically, I was spent. It wasn't until I was on the plane heading home that I truly felt safe. I've been back to Beijing and Shanghai more than once since then, but thankfully never ran into anyone else like Lee, and I never celebrated Thanksgiving there again. Okay, guys, this one is kind of scary. It's a little more gross than anything else, which is scary in its own way. It's kind of funny, too. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Turkey Disaster by Soft Burrito. I have a big chest freezer in my basement, and last year when turkeys were cheap for Thanksgiving, I picked up an extra one and put it in there. A few weeks ago, I noticed a smell coming from that area, and it turns out my cat, or kid, who knows, had accidentally bumped and unplugged the freezer. In horror, we turned it back on and got everything out and into the trash except the turkey, because we live in the country and didn't want to put it out until right before the trash came so it wouldn't attract coyotes. Yes, this is a legitimate concern at my house. Well, we forgot about the damn turkey. That is, until the day when the smell had finally busted through the freezer, hitting my nostrils with something akin to the scent I envisioned a bag full of buttholes might have on a muggy summer day. I ran downstairs to grab the stupid thing, and at this point even coyotes weren't going to be eating it. Its putrid turkey juices had frozen it solid to the floor of the freezer. Since there was nothing else in there, I unplugged it, assuming a few hours later I could plop that stink balloon of meat loose, but nope, it was still stuck. Also, to make a bad situation worse, I decided dumping a pot of hot water in there would loosen up the death grip the turkey corpse had on my freezer. What a mistake. While it did not loosen the frozen seal, it did create some kind of a filth brew, like the devil himself had made a turkey ooze brine in my basement freezer. Desperate, I held next to the meat sludge potpourri with a hairdryer, but all that did was cook the aforementioned death broth, sending its putrid aroma off in great billowing gasps up the stairs, through the air ducts, and between the walls. It was about this time the neighbor kids stopped by, and their words when my door opened were, Oh, God, why does your house smell like that? By now, the smell had embedded itself not just in my house, but in my hair, and I'm guessing my very soul. It was so deep in my nostrils that even fresh air smelled like death. By 8:30 that night, the turkey had won the day. I left the freezer to thaw more, hoping to be able to wrench it loose the next day. So I woke up early, bought 2 Glade scented candles, 4 things of Audubon, Febreze trash bags, and a bag of rock salt. Why the rock salt? Because the stank brine actually froze overnight. Froze solid in my freezer that had been turned off with the lid wide open for 24 hours. How? And where was this tenacious freezing ability when the plug got knocked loose? I was baffled and kind of impressed. So now the turkey was stuck in its own personal stank brine iceberg, like some horrific twist on the Sword in the Stone. I poured salt on the bad boy to loosen the ice, and then waited. Also, fun fact, if you light clean linen scented candles to mask the smell of rotting meat, your house just ends up smelling like someone stuffed a decaying animal with a lot of dryer sheets. Several hours later, the smell had become totally unbearable. I grabbed a shovel and plunged it into the icy hell broth, using it as a pry. In the process, I dented the hell out of the freezer liner, and my husband was mad, but I didn't care, because at that point I was planning on throwing it away. Not just the freezer, but the whole frickin' house. The shovel thing didn't work, and festering went on. The smell escalated, and I had an idea. Another horrible, awful idea. Technically, only the turkey wrapping was stuck. If I were to cut away the plastic and free the rotting bird from its frozen womb, I could end this all. Before I could talk myself out of it, I took a deep breath and plunged my bare hands into the package, tugging on the foul carcass. My hands burned in the cold, and for one horrifying moment, I thought I'd rip it in half. A foul yellow jelly coated my hands, and the smell burned my eyes. I gave one final pull, powered by sheer adrenaline, and it came loose. I stuck the green, yellow, and purple lump of flesh in a bag and ran as fast as I could for the trash outside. Finally, it was done, but I will never feel clean again. Now I began the slow and painful path towards being whoever I will be after this, because seeing a thing like this, smelling a thing like this, I'm not gonna lie, it changes a person. I should have a commemorative t-shirt made, or maybe get a tattoo or something to mark the struggle. Is this why those guys in prisons have tattoos of teardrops on their face? Probably. I'll figure it out. The real icing on this cake of meat stank, though? I'm a vegetarian. I wouldn't have eaten the damn bird anyway. I just got it to feed my meat-loving family. In my heart, I know tofu never would have done me dirty like this. Hey gang, thanks for listening to this episode of Uncle Josh's True Scary Stories. A little Thanksgiving action for you. This year, I'm very thankful for my family. I'm thankful for the blessings that I have in my job. And I'm thankful for the safety of my family. We've been through a lot this past year, some scary times and some good times. I'm thankful for each and every one of you who has listened to these videos or my podcast. And if you haven't already, like, share, and subscribe my work. Check me out in podcast format on your favorite platforms. Follow me on social media. Leave a comment down in the comments section, and I'll be sure to get back to you. If you've got a true scary story of any nature that you would like to hear me narrate, email UncleJoshTrueScaryStories@gmail.com. I read them all. Everyone, have a safe and healthy Thanksgiving holiday. If you're not celebrating and you live somewhere else in the world, hey, have a safe and healthy day as well. Everyone, be excellent to each other. Wear a mask, social distance. And until next time, remember, be wary of things that go bump in the night. It could be anything. A ghost, a monster, or the guy next door. If you're a serious comic book collector, just starting out your collection, or maybe you're just a casual reader, then you have to check out 3D Comics in Lancaster, New York. From graded comics, custom art lithographs, limited edition prints and statues, 3D Comics is a must-see for the serious enthusiast, but the laid-back atmosphere is perfect for anyone with a love for comic books and more. They also specialize in custom art Funko Pops, taking regular Funko Pops and having a team of artists do original art on the boxes. Each comes with a certificate of authenticity. Located at 32 Central Ave in the heart of the village of historic Lancaster, New York, 3D Comics is open Wednesday through Saturday, 10 to 6, with special appointments available on Sundays. Find them online at 3dcomicsandmore.com. That's the number 3, the letter D, comicsandmore.com. And if you prefer to shop online, owner Joel Charmani has tons of items available on eBay. Find a quick link to that on the shop's homepage. They also feature in-store appearances from today's hottest artists, special offers, and every Wednesday is New Comic Book Day. Give them a call at 716-860-7837, visit them online right now at 3dcomicsandmore.com, or better yet, just stop on in. But no matter where you are around the round world, 3D Comics is your destination for the best in comic books, custom art, and beyond. 3D Comics and More. That's the number 3, the letter D, comicsandmore.com. Tell them Uncle Josh sent you.